good afternoon, Juno. It's about 6 seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. This is Juno Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. I have a great lineup of guests that are going to be coming along and talking to us about things that are going on around the Juneau area today. Robbie Stell is going to drop into the studio right after National Native News and tell us about the Spring Fling up on campus. James Belke, an Anchorage artist, is here. He's opening a show at the Alaska State Museum, and we'll be doing a lecture on that subject tonight, so we'll get a little preview of that. We'll also have a preview of the Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. This is the Golden Girls Lecture you've been reading about with guest Merrill Jensen, and Angela Gowdy will drop by to tell us about the Rotaract Chili Cook-Off. So all of that is going to happen today on Juno Afternoon. Right now, it's time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A lawsuit filed Thursday by the Rosebud and Oglala Sioux tribes and Native mothers alleges South Dakota of violating the Indian Child Welfare Act. Victoria Wicks has more.
Outside the federal courthouse, people from Rosebud, Pine Ridge, and Standing Rock reservations gather to wait for the lawsuit to be filed. Afterward, at a news conference, one of the plaintiffs, Rochelle Walking Eagle of Rosebud, tells that her children were taken from her for 4 months before she could present evidence at a hearing and get them back.
When I was finally given a hearing and a chance to be heard by the court, more than 4 months after DSS put my children in foster care, it was proven that my children were not neglected and the judge dismissed the case.
Plaintiffs say officials in Pennington County violate federal law by removing scores of Indian children from their homes without sufficient evidence or adequate hearings. ACLU attorney Stephen Pivar says the court isn't even following state law, which holds that an initial hearing is supposed to involve evidence. And he says state law doesn't rise to the requirements of federal law.
What the state is doing instead is they're having an initial 48-hour hearing where they don't allow any evidence, any cross-examination, they don't give the parents any notice, and then they issue an order placing custody of the child in the hands of DSS for a minimum of 60 additional days.
Attorneys say they're not asking for monetary damages, but they're seeking to change Pennington County's processes so that families can have hearings quickly. Defendants had no comment. I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
This week, an alliance of Native groups from the U.S. and Canada vowed to fight proposed pipelines in both countries. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The alliance is opposed to the Northern Gateway and Keystone XL pipelines, both controversial. The first would tie the Alberta oil sands to the west coast of British Columbia, while the second would send oil to refineries on the American Gulf Coast. Phil Lane Jr. of the Yankton Sioux in the U.S. says Native groups south of the border will stand with their Canadian cousins and stop the pipelines one way or another.
Whether or not they sign or don't sign for this to go forward, Indigenous people are coming together with many, many allies across the United States and Canada, and we will not allow these pipelines to cross our territories.
A Western Canadian chief, Martin Louis of the Natlewutan First Nation, says the stakes are high and go beyond Native issues.
Canada wants to do business with First Nations. They have to recognize us legally. They've been stealing from us for the last 200 years. We're people. We share things. Now they're going to destroy our land? We're not going to let that happen.
The chiefs also brushed off the Canadian government's appointment this week of a special envoy to look at tensions between Natives and the energy industry. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Professional bull riders are competing in the Ty Murray Invitational this weekend in Albuquerque, New Mexico, including Dakota Lewis, the reigning Indian National Finals rodeo champion. Reporter Carrie Young spoke with the Northern Cheyenne rider Thursday.
How did you get started in this sport? I understand that if you start young enough, you start by riding sheep.
Well, I grew up in a rodeo family, and I went through the ranks riding sheep to calves to steers to junior bulls, and then got on to the big bulls.
And what makes you think this is what I want to do with my life?
When I watched my dad, that was probably the coolest thing I could see is when my dad would go out and make a good ride. I think I was more pumped up than he was, and just I knew from when I could talk that I wanted to be a cowboy, and it's just part of my lifestyle.
And what's the worst injury you've suffered?
Broken pelvis and a ruptured intestine. Injuries, you know, it's unfortunate that it has to happen, but everyone has to play with pain. It's just part of the game.
That was Carrie Young with Dakota Lewis. The event is expected to draw thousands of people. During this week in 2007, the first National Native HIV/AIDS Awareness Day was held across the United States to encourage testing and provide information about the disease. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick Click Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Quick look at the weather here. That snow's coming back. We can look at some light winds becoming southeasterly through the rest of the afternoon, and then tonight it's going to cloud up, and there's a slight chance of snow late, and then tomorrow there's a chance of snow. That's not slight. That's probably a little bit more than that, and then we're looking at mostly cloudy with snow and rain on Saturday. So weather's going to go back to a little bit of what we had over the last week when we got all that big dump, but maybe not the major big dump that we're talking about, which will be nice because there's going to be a bunch of people trying to get to the university campus on Friday night, and we don't want them skidding on the roads. They're all going to be going out there for an event that Robbie Stell is putting together, and it's a great pleasure to have her on the show. Hi, Robbie.
Oh, thank you, Pat. I'm very happy to be here to promote the spring dinner and auction. The UAS Alumni and Friends Organization is sponsoring this. It's our annual spring dinner. Some people have already purchased their tickets, and of course we're hoping to sell more. So if you need a ticket and want to get in on some fine auction items and a wonderful dinner Friday night at the Egan Library, call 796-6569 and reserve a ticket or two.
So you need to do this fairly quickly, I think. There's, what, seating for about 100 people?
Right under 100, so you do want to get tickets and not wait till the last minute.
Now, this is a pretty spectacular auction. You've got some things on the table that are going to be drawing some great bids. In particular, we're talking about an African safari. Is that correct?
It's the first time for us. There's an organization that got in touch with our president of the Alumni Association, Barbara Burnett, and said they would like to test this market and picked us to offer a safari for two. Now, I don't have a lot of detail. I understand it's for hunting, but it may be possible to hunt with a camera as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure
mm-hmm.
cameras go along on those. And so we're anxious to see how that goes for us. That's anew, but of course we offer lots of experiences in our live auction for Junoites who like to take their guests out fishing for four, who would like to take them whale watching. We have whale watching. We have Karen Polly, who is one of our, she's the former campus director in Ketchikan, and she has a absolutely wonderful guest cabin on her property with her main cabin and garden in Pelican. And she is offering her cabin up for a three-night stay, and that was quite competitive last year to get that cabin trip with Karen. So we hope we have some people who are going to scrap with each other over that one. We also have experiences like tea for four, a very formal tea, and fun to get together and get your friends together. Besides the live auction, there will be several tables, usually six tables of silent auction items that range from bed and breakfast, overnights, massages, flowers, jewelry, scarves, furniture, photographs, artwork. The Juno community is very, very generous.
Now, Robbie, the Juno community is very, very generous with this money. And then what does the university do with it? That's a key question.
Well, it's the Alumni Association fundraiser for scholarships. And that's why we're organized. We like to provide some educational programs for our alumni and keep them involved and attached to the university once they graduate. And so this is our major fundraiser. And we try to raise enough money to give around $15,000 a year to students in scholarships. And so anyone with an interest in applying for scholarship should look for the applications for the Alumni Association scholarships.
When you go to the university website, I know it's fairly easy to slide down into the scholarship section, and the application process for scholarships at UAS is really fairly very straightforward. So it's easy for students to put themselves in the line for a lot of the scholarship money. It's always amazing to me that when we come to the end of that period when people are supposed to apply for scholarships, that there are scholarships that no one applies for.
Yes.
So this is an opportunity. I imagine the alumni scholarships are fairly popular. But
yes, they are, because they're not degree specific, and they're not named scholarships where you have to give it to a musician or an educator. These are open. We do have criteria for awarding these, but since we are an alumni association, we do try to give preference to students who are trying to finish. They just need a couple more semesters. Maybe they're a sophomore. They want to get through the junior-senior year. And the university offers a number of scholarships for freshmen, so we try to target ours across the board.
Yeah, that's really important. A lot of people think scholarships are just for the freshman year, and it doesn't get any cheaper as you go through the college process. So the fact that UAS is very generous with scholarship money up through people who have one semester left, mm-hmm. that's really a big help, I think, to our students from here. So what's the menu?
The menu, I understand, is, I think, London broil and a chicken dish that I'm not sure I can pronounce it, but I'm sure it's very tasty.
Oh, okay.
And there are always a number of vegetables to complement the two main meat dishes. And so they will also have greens and green salad. The dinner price doesn't include dessert, because dessert is part of the live auction.
Ah.
And there are 12 tables, and there are 12 desserts. So we hope it's a competitive and fun auction as the desserts come out and tables bid for those desserts, pass them around, eat them up, spread the calories.
There you go.
There'll be lots of chocolate.
A great plan. Okay, so can parties get a table?
If they let us know that they've got the number of people, and I believe the tables hold 10.
Okay.
There may be some tables for 8, but...
But there's, this is Friday, April 5th, so there's time to get a group together for this little little soiree here, right?
Okay. There is, and it's a lot of fun when you bring your friends there and compete against them.
Or buy them all dessert.
Dessert. We hope they do that, too.
Right.
If you are an Alumni and Friends member, the evening is a $35 charge. And if you're not, you pay $45, but you could also just pay your dues that night to our staff as you go in the door.
Who is eligible to join Alumni and Friends?
Well, that's the most inclusive organization I can think of. Anyone who is interested in supporting the university's mission of education can join the Alumni and Friends. Anyone with ties, they like to come to our events, they'd like to be part of the Alumni Association, maybe help plan some of these events, we would invite them to come as a friend into the Alumni.
The Alumni and Friends Association has a whole bunch of events throughout the course of the year. There's a wine tasting at certain times.
Yes.
I think you do a cruise too, right?
We usually do a cruise. Often we do a whale watching trip. They've done golf trips to various places. I would assume that the Mariners trip is going to happen again. I mean, these are... Mm-hmm. It's kind of how many people show up.
Down to watch a game and back, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If they're well attended, we tend to repeat them.
Right. So this is not just the exclusive alumni of the University of Alaska Southeast. This is open to people who have any other feelings about the university. If you just like the place, you
can
join.
If you just like it, yes. If you like the place, if you took a few classes there, you like to see the university supported in the community, you like to come to our events, we welcome you as a member.
What are the annual dues?
The annual dues are less than $50. I'm pretty sure they're like $35.
And there's a discount for every one of those events. So if you pay your annual dues, then basically you almost make it all back.
Yes.
On the, you know, on the difference on the tickets if you went to these events. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, the event, again, is April 5th. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. It's in the Egan Library up at the Auk Lake campus of UAS. At 6 o'clock, the silent auction and no-host bar begins. Dinner will be served at 7 o'clock, and at 8 p.m., the live and dessert auction will begin. The tickets are on sale right now. $35 for members of the Alumni and Friends Association, $45 for general admission tickets. You gave a phone number at the beginning of this whole thing that people can call.
Yes, that's 796-6569.
796-6569, did I do it right?
You did it right.
Good enough. All right. Well, Robbie, thank you so much for telling everybody about this event. Folks, if you're thinking of bringing in your friends and neighbors and doing a table as a group, you need to get on it right now because these will sell out pretty quick.
Yes,
there's only
will.
100 people going to be going to this.
That's
thing,
right.
So,
yes.
All right.
Thank you very much, Pat, for
hosting.
You
bet. Well, thank you for coming down. Is called Rumba de la Isla. I'm hoping I haven't accented that out of existence. And it's Pedrito Martinez and a group of friends who are playing Latin music for us today. So we'll have some more of them as we proceed on through the show. My next two guests are here from right next door at the Alaska State Museum. There is an opening of an all-juried exhibition that starts today. And Jackie Manning, who puts these kinds of things up on the wall at the museum, is here with Jim Belke, who is an Anchorage artist who has, I think, three large charcoals up on the wall.
Charcoals on campus, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So welcome to Juneau, Jim, although as I understand it, this is sort of a return for you. You were saying that you had relatives who lived here a long time ago?
Yeah, my grandmother was here, and she taught at Treadwell before the mine collapsed. And then a year or two after the mine collapsed, she moved on to Seward. But we haven't had anyone here since then.
All right. But now you're based out of Anchorage.
Yeah, I was raised in Fairbanks, but now we're living in Anchorage.
Now, the art that I've been able to find for you, there are lots of these scenes where you sketch kind of a valley and a foreground. But mm-hmm. I didn't see any human figures in your art.
Yeah, I keep people out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that it's almost thematic in the sense that if you look at 3, 4, 5 of your paintings, you're almost seeing something flowing along through there. It's like you're almost turning our heads.
Well, that's good because I try to one of the things I've been concerned about is having more continuity in my art because I do kind of jump around sometimes too. So, but it's good to have sort of a recurring theme. And I like to go to the same place over and over again because it's like going to a concert hall or something. And even though you're in the same concert hall, you're listening to a different concert. And the landscape's that way, too.
I seem to remember someone publishing a book in which he took a picture out of his back window every day for 365 days and then published the photographs. And I guess the difference across those photographs is just amazing to notice. And it's like teaching you to see what's there.
Yeah, and the specific moment, and there, no two moments are the same. And I have there's a place that I go to, a bluff that's about a mile from our house in West Anchorage, and I call it Buttfree's Bluff because the wind is always blowing. There's a reason why they stuck windmills near there. And it is bitter cold. This is an entirely different climate. It's real hard to do drawings there, but I'll look out my window and I can see whether it's worth it to go there. Mm-hmm. And also I'll look at the tide tables because the tides really change the appearance. But I'll just tell my wife, I'm going to go to Buttfree's Bluff now, and she'll say, okay, bye, see you later.
Yeah. And so you put on your parka, your bunny boots, and your head coverings and go up there and shiver for a while
yeah.
and paint.
Yeah.
So this must explain the shaky line in your
Yeah, that and coffee.
shivering stuff. And very interesting art. I wanted to take advantage of the fact we have Jackie here. It's not just him, although he's kind of like the major piece of this, but what else have you got coming into the from the juried exhibition?
Well, there's 40 paintings in all, and it was a very competitive All-Alaska juried. I believe there were 479 entries from all over the state, and 40 paintings make up the show. And it was curated by Susan Cross from the MoCA in Massachusetts. And as far as local artists, we have Dan Fruits, who has a beautiful
Susan
painting.
Susan Cross from where?
She is from the Mass MoCA. She's the curator at Mass MoCA.
Which is?
It's the Museum of Contemporary Art in
okay.
Massachusetts.
Okay, thank
yes.
you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
insider museum
yeah.
talk. Come
Sorry.
On, Jackie.
MoCA and MoMA, you get used to those.
Yeah,
those
yeah.
two. Anyways, so we've got Dan Fruits, local artist from Juneau. And from Southeast, we have John McCabe from Petersburg. And then there's two other award winners. The winners for recognition are Clara Mache from Fairbanks and Asia Freeman from Homer. So, and, you know, a variety of other artists. And it's a really beautiful show. And Jim, of course, has three large paintings. Well, they're not paintings, charcoal drawings
yeah.
on canvas. And they're much more beautiful in life than they are in reproduction. So I encourage you to come and see the exhibit. We have it up until April 20th. But Jim, of course, he came in tonight and flew down to give a lecture at 6:30. The exhibit opens from 4:30 till 6:30, and then he'll lecture at 6:30, and it's free admission. So,
Jim,
please
without
come on
giving
down.
Away the punchline, what do you plan to talk about tonight?
I'm going to go back over about 35 years and show my early stuff, my middle stuff, my late stuff. And I'm going to show how skinny I used to be. And went through the slides, and I thought, boy, I need to lose some weight.
Yeah.
And we're also pulling for, you had a solo show at the museum back in 1991, and the museum purchased 6 of his drawings, and we're pulling some out to display tonight as well.
Okay. So. Now, and this is at what time tonight?
The exhibit's open from 4:30 to 6:30, and well, it's open right now, but 4:30 to 6:30 is when we're having the reception, and at 6:30 is when Jim's going to give his talk.
Okay. Okay. Your three pieces were selected for a special honor in this. You were actually the winner of the Juror's Choice Award.
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about how that process works?
Well, I'd imagine it was very difficult with the amount of entries, you know, 479 mm-hmm. entries, and looking at all those images. And I've juried a couple shows before, and I've watched jurors in action, and you know, sometimes it hits them right away. And I wasn't there when Susan was juring this show, but Jim's was at her talk. So when she juried All Alaska, juried 34. This is 34th All-Alaska Juried, she gave a talk about it. So Jim, I think tonight is going to talk a little bit about what she thought of the show and the artwork in Alaska, and I'm interested to hear that.
And then I wanted to close by asking you, you've looked through the rest of the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Who are you impressed by?
I really like Asia's Freeman's work, and they actually remind me quite a lot of Southeast because they're from Homer. They're real interesting. They're she uses water-based oils, and Clara, I can't even pronounce her last name, Mache. I think that I especially like her painting, and I like both of the Southeast Alaska artists' work, Fruits and
McCabe.
Yeah. And I there's some pieces that I'm not as hot on, but I think it's a pretty good. I think it's a strong show, mm-hmm. and it is tough that it gets cut down to 40 pieces. That's not much left.
It would be wonderful to have one of the artists walk you through the show. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to do and say, yeah. Here, look at this, mm-hmm. you know?
I'd love
that opportunity myself.
Jim came in early, so when we went upstairs, he was able to do it a little bit, you know.
Yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful to do that with a crowd, you know, and just have everybody kind of follow the guy around or the artist around and get it, you know, get a look from the trained eye.
Every once in a while, we'll do walkthroughs like that. Yeah. So instead of a lecture, a walkthrough, and it's
well, the next time you're going to do one of those, give me a call.
Okay, yeah. We'll do.
Okay, well, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming down to visit us. Everybody needs to go over between 4:30 and 6:30, and then they need to be there at 6:30 for Jim Belkey's lecture, a kind of a retrospective of 35 of his years as an artist.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
Jackie.
So much,
thank
Pat.
You, Jim.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 22nd of March, 2013. It's the birthday of Stephen Sondheim, New York City, 1930. His musicals include A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods. Stephen Sondheim, who said, "I prefer neurotic people. I like to hear rumblings beneath the surface." It's the birthday of Billy Collins, New York City, 1941, an only child, wrote his first poem at the age of 7 while he was riding with his parents and looked out the window and saw a sailboat on the East River. He was an English professor and poet, wrote a couple of books before his breakthrough in 1988, The Apple That Astonished Paris. By 1999, the New York Times called him the most popular poet in America. 3 of his 4 books were in the top 16 bestsellers on Amazon.com, competing with Walt Whitman, Robert Frost, Jewel, and Jim Morrison. Billy Collins, who said, "I don't think people read poetry because they're interested in the poet. I think they read poetry because they're interested in themselves." It's the birthday of the novelist who wrote, "I just pointed my rifle at him and let him have the big one, right through the 3rd button on his shirt. If he ever figured to sew that particular button on again, he was going to have to scrape it off his backbone." And that's Louis L'Amour, born in Jamestown, North Dakota, 1908, author of many Western novels, including How the West Was Won. It's the birthday of the best-selling novelist in the world, James Patterson, born Newburgh, New York, 1947. He was an executive at the J. Walter Thompson Ad Agency, retired to devote himself to writing. He's published more than 70 novels, and according to recent data, he outsells Stephen King, Dan Brown, and John Grisham combined. And it's the birthday of Edith Grossman, Philadelphia, 1936. Became a professor of Spanish literature in New York City, and in the mid-1980s set out to translate Gabriel Garcia Marquez's novel Love in the Time of Cholera. It was such a success that Edith Grossman was able to quit teaching and begin translating full-time. She's since translated all of the books that Marquez has published since 1990. Here's a poem for today by Billy Collins, entitled The Country. I wondered about you when you told me never to leave a box of wooden strike anywhere matches lying around the house because the mice might get into them and start a fire. But your face was absolutely straight when you twisted the lid down on the round tin where the matches, you said, are always stowed. Who could sleep that night? Who could whisk away the thought of the one unlikely mouse padding along a cold water pipe behind the floral wallpaper, gripping a single wooden match between the needles of his teeth? Who could not see him rounding a corner, the blue tip scratching against a rough-hewn beam, the sudden flare, and the creature for one bright, shining moment suddenly thrust ahead of his time, now a fire-starter, now a torch-bearer, in a forgotten ritual, little brown druid illuminating some ancient night, who could fail to notice, lit up in the blazing insulation, the tiny looks of wonderment on the faces of his fellow mice, one-time inhabitants of what once was your house in the country. A poem by Billy Collins, The Country, from Nine Horses Poems, published by Random House, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 27 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host, going through a wonderful collection of guests today. And my next one is a fascinating gentleman who is normally up to his ears in plants. Merrill Jensen is here. He's the horticulturist and at Arboretum manager at the Juneau Arboretum, but tonight he's putting on a different hat and is becoming a historian for us as part of the ongoing fireside lectures that are held out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Merrill is going to talk about the Golden Girls.
Yep, the Golden Girls. This is going to be about Margaret and Irma Peterson, the daughters of John Peterson, who homesteaded Pearl Harbor and started mining up above the homestead, which Peterson Creek and Peterson Lake now bear his name. And it's a fascinating history of what these girls did when they were just teenagers, when they took over the mine from their dad in 1913 when he fell ill. And they were just in their teens, and they, you know, they didn't know any better, and they just did what they had to do to maintain the mine and the family.
Gold mine.
Gold mine, yeah. Okay. Hard rock gold mine. It wasn't, you know, out there with
this is
the,
not,
the pan.
This is not the rocker in the pan. This
nope.
is
this
is
know,
with the pick and the shovel and the
pick
explosive
and the shovel
stuff.
And,
yeah.
and the blasting and, yeah. you know, hauling the ore and running the mill and, you know, doing the amalgam plates, the whole nine yards.
Did they have all of that in place out at the
Pearl
Harbor?
They had all that in place out there. They had a small mill. They were able to do, a couple of tons a day, but they spent a lot of time milling and doing all the work, horseshoeing. They repaired the tramway from the homestead there up to the mines. So there's that 4 mile tramway that they worked on. And
how much of that still exists?
Not very much. If you go up and hike the trail up to the cabin up at Peterson Lake, there's bits and pieces of the tramway that are out there. The Forest Service is redoing that trail, but they're conserving sections of it. They're in still pretty good shape. But you get up to the Muskeg, and you can see that going out across the Muskeg, yeah, where they split the rails and put them out there, and it's still out there.
It's fascinating
amazing.
When you get out there. All of a sudden, you realize you're walking on an old railroad.
Yeah, it is. It is. And to find out that it was teenage girls that were doing that,
I didn't know that.
it's one of those, really? They did all this on their own with no help from anybody else?
Well, you were able to find a lot of visual images to augment your talk.
I went poking through the state archives and the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and there's a wealth of information out there, and I'm just scratching the surface of the family story. There's a book or two out there that could be written with all the material that's in both sets of archives. It's pretty neat to sit down and look through it and actually hold their journals in your hand and turn page after page and go, wow, pretty cool.
Yeah. They also had on site out there, they had cattle.
Yep.
And they with the insanity of the early times, they were raising mink.
Mm-hmm. this was the quintessential, Bush Alaskan homestead. They did a little bit of everything that they needed to do to survive. And after Irma married Charlie Olson, they fished for salmon and halibut and herring.
Sold produce,
yeah. They did really well with produce. They were making runs into town, every other day, supplying the local grocers with material that they were growing as it was coming off.
And then I guess they got a contract to provide the mail to Sentinel Island Lighthouse?
Yes, they hauled the mail out to Sentinel a couple of times a week, and that actually paid fairly well also.
So they did
everything.
You have to put a whole bunch together in order to do this.
Yeah, yeah. So all these bits and pieces that that I came across, it's kind of assembled it together and kind of doing it as chapters, as part of their life as they went through it.
Well, I certainly don't want to take away from that topic, but I cannot have the horticulturist in charge of the Arboretum here without asking you some questions about the Arboretum.
The Arboretum, yes.
And I guess one of the things is I keep going out there and thinking I should stop, but I'm always driving somewhere else, and so I eventually have to spend an afternoon out with you.
Tell
us about our Arboretum.
The Arboretum was the brainchild of Caroline Jensen. She and her husband inherited the property after the Olsons passed away in the early 60s, and they moved out there, and Caroline basically was the driving force. She was quite the gardener, and she rolled up her sleeves and transformed this Bush homestead into this just amazing garden. And as she grew older, she wanted to find a way to maintain the property. So in the early 90s, she started talking with the Southeast Alaska Land Trust and got a conservation easement in place saying that the property would be preserved until her passing. And at that point, it would transfer ownership to the city and become the Arboretum. So when she passed away in 2006, all that pre-planning took hold, and the search went out for a horticulturist, and I just happened to have the same lucky last name as she did and applied and had the right credentials and moved up here. And
From
Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yep, this is my fourth public garden that I've worked at, so
it's
really fun to start something from scratch and bring it into fruition and take it to its next chapter. But Caroline, she was an amazing person. She did a lot of work, and this was all by herself as well. So another tough Alaska woman that rolled up her sleeves and took something and just made something special out of it.
Meryl, what's unique about our Arboretum?
Our Arboretum, we now hold the national collection for the genus Primula. Caroline loved primroses, and she planted accordingly. And the first few years that I was out there, I was looking around going, we should formalize this. So I started doing the homework to find out what we needed to do to hold the national collection.
Mm.
And it was a long, drawn-out two-year process, and we took her bones and built upon them, and we now hold the national collection out there, which is pretty cool for a small little garden out the road.
I'm impressed, but I have to say that I don't know much about a national collection. Are there national collections of all kinds of plants?
Yes, there are. This is a program run by the North American Plant Collections Consortium, which is a subset of the American Public Gardens Association. And there's national collections all across the country. So like a couple of gardens hold the national collection for oaks and magnolias, cherries, things like that. So it's a program where collections are codified and studied, and it's a more or less a repository for these specific plants. And with Juneau's unique climate that we have here, it's perfect for growing primroses, and that was another reason why Caroline grew a lot of them. And it was just a natural for us to take that as a logical next step.
That was going to be my question. Was I see now that the primroses would be a natural thing for us to have. Is that across the species? In other words, are there primroses that won't grow in Juneau? Or?
There are a handful that aren't hardy. Most of them, though, are from the mountains of Central Asia, the Himalaya, the Altai, the Pamir. And then all across Europe, and there's a couple of native North American ones, but they love cool, wet, moist climates. So we're natural.
Beyond the opportunity to view, are there other responsibilities that come with holding a national collection?
Research. We have to make the collection available to anybody who wants to research, further research, what we have growing. We also supply seed to a couple of different seed exchanges around the country where we make that seed available for other people to grow out.
And this is something I'm not sure that I ever knew.
Yeah,
this is wonderful. Are there other aspects to the Arboretum that that are going to be equally wonderful when I hear about them?
The vegetable garden is still growing produce after it was, first planted back in 1904. So it's been in continuous production since then, and almost all the produce that we do grow there, it goes to the local food banks.
And what do you grow there that is taking advantage of that wonderfully worked soil that must be there?
We've got cabbage, carrots do just amazing. Drawing a blank. What do we grow? I've been looking at snow
probably
for so long.
Probably some potatoes,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, potatoes do really well also.
Yeah.
One of the potato varieties that we do grow out there, it's an heirloom variety. It's an old Tlingit variety that we got from an elder up in Klukwan.
Huh.
We call it Maria's potato. And as far as I know, we're the only ones that are really actively growing it. We have the native studies students from the middle school come out, and they harvest those each fall, and they get to take them back home and have a taste of their heritage.
Well, wonderful. I'm so glad that you came in to talk about the fact that you're doing this talk tonight, and I managed to get you to tell us a little bit about the Arboretum. What are the hours?
We're open Wednesday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we are open on Monday holidays as well. So all those Monday holidays where it's a nice day and you're looking for something to do, you can sneak out to the Arboretum and check things out.
Stuff to see in the winter?
Lots of snow. we get a lot more snow out there than we do in town. So it's we easily get 20-25% more snow out there. So.
Dropped in any cross-country ski tracks for those of us who are
there's
who
not
are
enough room to really to ski out. But yeah, if you're heading out to Eagle Beach to do a couple of laps out there, stop by.
Well, you've heard this fascinating gentleman who is our Arboretum's horticulturist and manager of the Arboretum. He's going to be talking tonight, Friday, at 6:30, and then the lecture repeats at 8 p.m. about the Peterson sisters, the two teenage daughters who took over the gold mine out there on the old homestead and mined it for a few years while their father was ill. And we're responsible for laying those strange-looking train tracks that you walk along when you're going to Peterson Lake Cabin. So,
that was just part of what they did.
I wish you really good luck with your talk tonight. I think you'll probably have a big crowd, and I'm sure it's going to be a fascinating talk.
Great. Thanks for having me in.
You bet. Thank you.
Tonight on 360 North, catch up with global events with the BBC World News at 7 and get an in-depth look at Alaska weather at 7:30. At 8, a semester-long search for Che, Hemingway, El Papa, and the Authentic Tourist. UAS students in Cuba. That's this week's Evening at Egan presentation by students and faculty who made the trip. Gavel, Alaska resumes at 10. It's a great way to look at public affairs tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Chilies are to remind us that tonight is the Rotaract Chili Cook-Off, so we might have some more details about that, but the event is this evening. Right now, let's listen to a special feature.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
My name is Alan Young. I'm from Juneau, Alaska, and I'm 18 years old.
This is Alan Young playing the tuba. Alan is really, really good at playing tuba. He not only played first chair in his Juneau Douglas High School band, but he earned that distinction in the many honor bands high school players can compete for. His winnings include playing first chair three times for the Southeast and All-State Alaska Honor Bands, plus 2 years for the six-state regional All-Northwest Honor Band, and his last 2 years of school, he was selected as the best player in the United States for the All-National Honor Band. He got to play at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. for that. One reason why he's achieved all of this is because he spends a lot of time practicing.
I try to practice as often as I can, but during the school year, I would practice before band class, after band class, during lunch, and after school a lot of times.
Alan says he likes best to show people that the tuba is not what he describes as an oompa instrument.
Most people, when they think of tuba, they think, oh, like a polka band, kind of oompa background stuff. What I like about this instrument is that it is surprisingly versatile. And you can do so much with the tuba that most people don't realize.
Alan begins his studies this year at Pacific Lutheran University in Washington State. He's a music major. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
About 10 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO Juno. We're broadcasting here from the studios with Juno Afternoon right now, and my next guest is here to tell us about the reason we were playing a record about chilies a couple of minutes ago. Tonight is the Rotaract Chili Cook-Off, is that right?
That's right.
You look like you can still breathe. Angela Gowdy is here. She evidently hasn't been sampling, right?
I haven't been what?
You haven't been sampling, so you can still talk and breathe?
Yeah, no sampling.
So how many entries do we have at this point? Do you know?
You know, we don't know. We don't know the total until everyone gets there.
Uh-huh.
We're hoping for, at the very least, 15.
Okay. Where is the Chili Cook-Off being held?
It's at the Twisted Fish.
Okay.
Yeah, from 6 to 8 tonight. And it's $10 at the door, and it's a family event, so people attending don't have to be 21,
right.
But we do ask that you bring your ID.
Okay.
If you have one.
All right. And then when you come, you get chili, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The $10 gets you, a place in line to get a bowl of chili, and
okay.
Then if everyone's gone through, you go back and get another bowl.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then are there judges? Is this a judged
yes.
competition?
Yes. Okay. There are 4 judges, the quote-unquote celebrity judges.
All right. Who are the celebrity judges?
We've got Jerry Nankervis. He was a former police chief, I believe, and okay. He's a current assembly member. We have Abby Roja from Abby's Kitchen. We have Lorraine Durr, and she was the founder of Shez Alaska.
Oh, Shez Alaska, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then we have Eric Boras, who's the Trail Mix director.
Okay. Well, a likely group of celebrities to be able to judge the chili cook-off.
Yeah.
Have they been properly prepared? Have they had instruction in getting their tongues set for the poblanos?
I feel like that should be a personal thing. Everyone does it differently.
Cool. So it costs $10 to get in. The money, at least some of it's probably going to the club, but or going to the restaurant. But most of it's probably a fundraiser for Rotaract, right?
No, the fundraiser is actually for ShelterBox.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about ShelterBox.
Okay, so ShelterBox is an international nonprofit organization. It's a disaster relief program. People who have lost their homes due to natural disasters, especially if it's in a large area, usually ShelterBox is there. I know that they helped out Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, yeah.
Probably
they
helped
out
the east coast
Japan.
Of the United States very recently, I would imagine.
I would imagine they did.
Yeah.
I don't quite know for certain.
Mm-hmm.
In a shelter box, there are provisions and toiletries for an extended family, up to 10 people. There's, sleeping bags, water sanitizing tools, cooking utensils and tools, yeah, all that stuff. And I've seen the tent, and it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very large. And so it's about $1,000 per tent,
so
per box.
So Rotaract raises the money, and then that goes to the shelter box organization, and they use it to buy a shelter box that they can distribute to some family that has lost their home in a disaster.
Correct.
That's
yes.
There's a great deal of honorable activity there. I like that.
Yeah. And we're happy to help.
Yeah. Yeah. What else is on the Rotaract schedule?
For the evening?
No, just, well, oh. For the evening, yes. Let's start there.
Well, for the evening, we've got a nurse's station going on. There's some baked goods. One of our Rotaractors are helping out with that, so that'll be kind of fun. I mean, otherwise, it's the Twisted Fish. It's a great place. There's going to be some music. Chili, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Who's bringing the music in, do you know?
Yeah.
What group?
Yeah. So, Rotaract events in the future?
Yeah.
We're not exactly sure on this next one, but I know that KXLL is actually holding an adult prom, and they've booked the jack for that already, and things are underway. And we're kind of getting on board, hopefully, with that. Not quite positive on the details yet, though.
Now, Rotaract is an organization that basically is for younger business people to eventually probably move toward Rotary, but it's its own organization until you're what age?
30.
30, okay.
So 18 to 30-year-olds join Rotaract, and if you're high school age, you're in Interact.
Yeah.
And then you can be 18 to be in Rotary. Just I know that Rotaract is pretty informal. And so a lot of younger folks are more, you know, identified with Rotaract just because it fits their schedule a little bit. They don't have to attend the meeting, and they don't get in trouble for it if they don't, that sort of thing.
Don't have to pay the fines and that sort of
thing. Yeah.
So how many Rotaractors are there?
At this last meeting, we had a good amount of people there. There was probably 11 members.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Generally, we have 5 very stable members. All in all, we have a pretty good sized group, but we don't get everybody at each meeting.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Because everyone helps out anyway.
It's a casual organization. So yeah. And when you have an event like this, no problem. You can find the people to,
exactly.
come in and help.
People are willing to help.
Well, the chili cook-off then is beginning at, one more time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. It's at the Twisted Fish. It costs $10 to get in the door, but you get a bowl of chili and maybe seconds. And you get to applaud the winner of the intense competition to be judged by 4 celebrity judges.
Yes.
Sounds like a great event. Everybody ought to go over and have a bowl of chili tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Angela Gotti, for coming and telling us about it.
Mm-hmm.
Incidental music today is being provided by Pedrito Martinez. It's from an album or a CD called Rumba de la Isla. I wanted to remind everyone that tomorrow is the used media sale. That goes on all day long down at KTOO. There is a room down there completely filled with vinyl and CDs and DVDs. So this is your chance. The prices are amazing. Most of it's like $1. So you're not bring a $10 bill and you can walk away with a veritable music library. So the KTOO used media sale all day tomorrow, well, from 9 to noon tomorrow, downstairs at the KTOO studios. Update on the weather forecast. Tonight we're looking at mostly cloudy, slight chance of snow late, lows around 23 and variable winds 10 miles per hour. And Saturday, mostly cloudy, chance of snow in the morning and then a chance of rain in the afternoon, highs around 36, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. I'll be back hosting the program on Monday. I'll be talking with Light the Way for Justice with our guest Mo Longworth. We'll get some details on Saturday's reading by Ishmael Hope. It's Defenders of Alaska Native Country. Bob Purvis will join us to talk about employing technology to assist people with vision impairments. And Rachel Brown from AWARE will come in to highlight the upcoming advocacy training sessions. So Juno afternoon on Monday, I'll be back. Delighted to host you again as we meet some of those interesting people. You're listening to us on KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also broadcast down translators throughout the area because we live in the fjord here. In the valley in Auk Bay, you can tune to K276 AF at 103.1. To get a slightly clearer signal. You can hear us well in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek if you tune to 101.7 and listen to K269 AO. Now we broadcast out. Gustavus listens to us on K201 AM. That's on 88.1 megahertz in Gustavus. We're on 91.9 megahertz in Hoonah on K220BT and Excursion Inlet and IC Strait. We're on 89.9 megahertz. The call sign is K210AS. In Juneau, you can get KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872 and KXLL on 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Pat Moore, been your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Been a great delight to take you through some of the activities that are coming up in Juneau and to bring these interesting guests to you. I'll see you again on Monday.